Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jenny Masters.
Hey!
A slightly flowery delivery. Spot the actress.
Indeed. We may also be joined...
That's a good thing.
Yes.
Sorry, Jen looked a bit downcast.
We may also be joined later by Zoe, the wife of me, who's currently cooking, and may or may not join us for a review of Last Chance Harvey.
Ooh.
So we'll see.
We shall see.
If we can lure her away from making me a lovely dinner.
You're lucky, man.
I feel guilty.
Well, you should do, considering we all just had lunch about, like, 20 minutes ago.
I know.
What are we going to talk about this week?
We'll do a bit of Last Chance Harvey and Terminator Salvation.
Terminator Salvation. Which I've actually seen twice this weekend.
Really? That
well,
good?
It wasn't. It was good. I enjoyed it. But it was also partly because I saw it with some people and then saw it with someone else.
Okay.
With me?
With Jen, in fact.
Oh, I wanted to see it.
She's another person.
Fair enough.
And Jen apparently doesn't know anyone else.
So I went
saw it again.
Oh, good.
But we also have Desert Island Flicks.
Desert Island Flicks. And we've also got In This Week in Movie History.
Oh, yes.
Yay.
And we have. Oh, bless you. And we've got a brief chat with comedian Matt Price about his favourite movies.
Mm-hmm.
And your emails.
And some admin.
Some admin.
Yes, emails, basically.
And that's it, really.
I'll do.
And then it'll be another week.
Exactly. One week closer to death.
Exactly. But this is episode number 30.
This is 30.
30 glorious years.
It's now as old in weeks as two of us are in years.
Yeah. So what is this episode called, then?
I don't know, yeah.
I think, Movie Banter XXX would deliver on
true.
The, the Roman numerals.
Uh-huh.
True. While also implying a certain degree of porn, which we tend not to cover.
No. Well, XXX isn't porn, is it? It's Vin Diesel.
Well, yes, but no, but XXX is used.
Vin Diesel porn.
Vin Diesel porn.
Oh, nice. Oh, nice. No need.
But XXX is also used in a porn context. We'll see how it goes. I think XXX is likely, but by the time you're hearing this, you'll know anyway, so it's fine.
30 going on 13. Go on.
We've had that.
No, that's the wrong way around, though.
Oh.
13 going on 30, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the film title. Yeah. We used it for 13.
You got that wrong before. You called it 17 going on 30 last time. Particularly bad, given that it was In This Week in Movie History, and I said, it's someone's 13th birthday. And you went, 13th? Oh, yeah. 17 going on 30. Quite poor.
Well, maths isn't a strong point. You should be.
Shall we take that as a cue to launch into In This Week of Movie History?
Yeah,
we could do.
Let's play with the format.
We've got a couple of emails this week, but we haven't heard anyone answering the thought we did have last week, which was because last week features and concepts were kind of scattered. But listening to it as I was editing it, I kind of liked it. Yeah. It was sort of a bit freeform.
It worked well.
So we're going to keep on doing that unless anyone tells us.
You know, when a subject comes up.
We'll do it then. Yeah. So we'll cover everything, but at random times.
Exactly. So we're going to do it right now.
Hey.
Here we go. In This Week of Movie History. Okay. So I'll mention an event. You tell me what the film was. Okay.
I'm not looking.
And at least this week, it won't all be D-Day references and devil babies.
Well, you never know.
You never know. By popular demand. June the 11th, 1970, Billy Blatt gets whacked, beaten, kicked and pistol-whipped to a bloody pulp in Henry Hill's bar by Tommy and Jimmy, then bundled into the trunk of the car. But what's the movie?
I wasn't sure until I heard a name, and now I know. It's Goodfellas.
Correct.
Hey.
It is indeed Goodfellas. On the same day, the very same day, but years before, in 1509, Henry VIII married Catherine of Aragon. But what was the movie?
I can only think of one film that covers that.
It's not going to be the Other Boleyn Girl, no.
Oh. Oh, okay, I can now think of two films that cover that. Either the Other Boleyn Girl or Elizabeth. I'm going to go... Elizabeth, because that was where I first thought.
You can have, to be honest, you can have Elizabeth, the Other Boleyn Girl, Anne of a Thousand Days, or Carry On Henry with Sid James.
Oh, right.
So the choice is yours.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. Similarly, historical, June the 11th, 1962, John Clarence Anglin and Frank Lee Morris escape from Alcatraz. But what was the film?
Was it The Rock?
No.
It's going to be Escape from Alcatraz.
Correct.
Hey.
start again. Good. June the 13th, 1944, Captain John Miller dies protecting a bridge.
That's going to be... It's going to be Saving Private Ryan.
Indeed. You see, you thought D-Day was all over.
No,
forget, it doesn't end with D-Day. June the 13th, 2003, a gigantic monolith found in orbit near Jupiter's moon. Monolith, moons, space, monoliths... Moons.
2001.
Indeed.
Never seen that.
No.
You're not?
No.
I've never seen it all in one go. I always fall asleep about 2 hours in.
Yeah, it's a surprise. I mean, it's a very good, thoughtful but slow film.
Okay.
And finally for this week, June the 14th, 1940, Nazis invade Paris. Rick Blaine is stood up at the train station by Ilse Lund.
It's going to be Casablanca.
Indeed,
hey. Casablanca. Oh,
yes. Of course, Rick Blaine.
Yes, Rick Blaine. It's the names that generally give things away.
And on the self-same day, a spoof of Rick Blaine, Sam Diamond, he trusts a dame for the very last time. She says she's going out for a bottle of wine, and 2 hours later, the Germans march in.
Is that the Steve Martin film?
No, it's not. It's a character, Sam Diamond, but it's a Humphrey Bogart spoof played by Peter Falk, Columbo.
And the film is Clue.
Murder by Death.
Oh, Murder by Death.
Yes, it's the other one, indeed. Well worth a look. I find that highly amusing. So there you go. That was In This Week in Movie History.
Hey! Why are you awing?
I'm sad because it's ended.
It'll be back next week.
It's like the 30, there's like 29 more. You can just go back in the archives and dig them out.
Yeah.
Do, by the way, if listeners in, because people tend to, because our listeners, looking at the usage things, people tend to sort of listen to the current episode, seems more popular than the older ones.
Yeah.
Which is always slightly odd. I would have thought people would go back, give the older ones a try, they're all still there.
They're all worth a go. It's about other films that have been out and gone, but you know.
Exactly, but the banter is still fresh.
The films will come back on the DVD thing.
Very true.
If you missed it at the cinema, now's your chance to find out what's worth seeing. You know?
Oh, yes.
That's the way to do it.
Speaking of cinematic stuff,
yeah,
as it vaguely ties in, could do Terminator.
Go for it.
As saw it this week, big new release. Big new-ish release. Yes, Terminator Salvation, which is Christian Bale. I'm still trying to avoid looking at the laptop, even though I'm now allowed to, but it's now instinctive. I'm thinking I shouldn't. Christian Bale as John Connor, and this is finally the thing we've heard so much about for the past 25 years, in fact. Yeah, Terminator's 84.
What have we heard much about?
Sorry. The Terminator films, we've always heard about Judgment Day and the War with the Machines.
I see. Never seen it.
It's always been present day. And now finally we see the War with the Machines.
I thought you were going to say the film is what you've heard. I haven't heard about that. I've heard a bit of hype for the last week or two. But
no, this is the first time we've sort of properly seen. I mean, we've seen little flash forwards and things. And I was actually quite surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think it may just be my expectations are a bit low. I was expecting something quite generic. But it was surprisingly engaging. It is thin on plot, but not in a bad way. You don't really, if you think about it, you realise it's thin on plot, but it doesn't really suffer from that, if that makes sense. And it's not overly, I mean, it is heavy on action, but it's all strung together nicely.
Now, I haven't seen this yet, but it is directed by McGee, isn't it?
Which has
massively put me off.
The trouble is that McGee, he has a stupid name, fair enough, but even he has acknowledged it's a stupid name. I think it's actually kind of a nickname that he got from somewhere, and he just sort of uses it.
Yeah, because he wasn't born McGee, was he?
No.
There's no point in him saying, I've got a stupid name, my parents not christened me McGee.
No, but it's just sort of what he uses. I'm just trying to think what he's directed.
Yeah, what?
The two Charlie's Angels
Charlie's
films.
Angels and Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. That was the last film he did, as far as I'm aware.
Really? Yeah, it could well be. Thing is, Charlie's Angels is fun. I mean, it's obviously light fluff and drivel. And Charlie's Angels Full Throttle is very average, but verging on quite weak. But this, I genuinely think, should propel him upwards in terms of, I mean, what people may like or dislike the film or criticise it or not, but at the very least, it's a competently directed, nicely put together film. So, and not, it's not the mark of someone who can't direct and just directs rubbish. I mean, there's some good things going on this. I think someone made reference saying he's obviously been influenced by Children of Men to a degree.
No, really?
Because there are a couple, I think the first time around I noticed one, and then the second time around I noticed two or three more, where a couple of quite long tracking shots, almost certainly strung together with cheats and explosions and things covering stuff up. And nothing to the extent of Children of Men. Mm. Those were really awe-inspiring. But, I mean, quite near the beginning, there's a shot with Christian Bale where he sort of climbs out of a hole and then stuff happens. And it's probably a minute or two long shot with a lot of action going on. And it's nicely strung together.
It's sort of ironic, given that with McGee and that sort of film, it's the quick cut.
Yeah.
You know, lots of flashbang, that there, look at that, look at that, look at that. It seems to be quick cuts and really long shots.
Yes.
So nothing in the middle, no standard level
shots.
No,
there's really not too many quick cuts. There's nothing too sort of up close and personal and flashing around. There's no sort of shaky cam style born. So I was quite impressed. But nothing hugely flary, nothing David Fincher levels of brilliant. But if you think nothing of McGee at the moment, you should expect.
Wait till you see this.
Well, you should see it and think, oh, actually, he's all right. He's not necessarily going to win an Oscar for Best Direction, but there's things going on there. And in terms of the film as a whole, Christian Bale, he's good, but he's not. I think, like Batman, he inhabits that role quite nicely. John Connery is a bit more generic, largely because there's not much emotional depth to him. He's just kind of, we must do this, we've got to fight the machines, we've got to blow this up. That's it, really. That's all he's got to do. So, was it? It was one of you two, I think, I was talking to, saying that it could be, they could have had probably someone else playing John Connor. It didn't have to be that big a star. But then whoever I was speaking to said, but without Arnie in it as a franchise, you're going to need another big-level star to sell it.
Yes.
And whereas, like, Nick Stahl in Terminator 3, he was all right as John Connor, but nothing that special. But you couldn't really have had him in this, because he's got to carry it, and he's not a big enough name. Just, I mean, because when marketing this, you can say, Terminator Reservation starring Christian Bale, and people are, oh, okay, it's Christian Bale. Whereas with, you couldn't say, starring Nick Stahl, because then no one really cares, and it'll sound...
Well, I haven't seen the film, of course, but I can... We haven't done the email section of the show yet, of course, but I can be the voice of Jed, our long-term listener, fan of the friend of the show, who has seen the film, and so what I'll do is I'll pop in occasionally with the point he's made.
No, fair enough.
And I'll be the voice of Jet.
The voice of Jet. Oh, okay.
I don't know how he sounds, but let's assume he's got a bit of a cold. So Jed says, because last week we mentioned, as Jen said last week, that you couldn't quite see, you know, Christian Bale. He's done Batman. He's Batman already. Why also be part of another franchise like this?
Yeah.
And Jed agrees, but you know, then does say that he does put it off, and you know, he's a very dedicated and talented actor. Though he does say in this film he might only be giving 70-80% of his stuff.
Yeah, I think I can see that. But it's it's hard to tell whether he's only giving 70-80% or the script only lets him. He's only got so much to do, and he couldn't put a lot more in.
I actually found Christian Bale probably a little bit monotone in this. Actually,
yeah,
a little bit monotone and just a bit angry at everything.
Yes, there were moments of sort of shouting and line delivery, which don't necessarily fit.
Yeah.
It's not bad as such, and it's not distracting as such, but given that you know he can do more and better, it doesn't quite fit him. It's fine. Mm. It doesn't detract from the film much, but it's not quite up to par.
I wonder whether that's maybe direction as well.
Maybe, yeah, that could be the G factor.
Mm. Maybe it's because there was someone fiddling with the lamps just while he was filming. He was distracted all the way through. That's what was happening.
Angry.
Yes. I was also actually impressed with references, because like T3 is a little bit sort of self-contained. I mean, it's all right, but it's not great. It ties into the other films, but there's no little nods and winks and things. Mm. Whereas this one ties in quite nicely, because there's more. Yeah, this isn't really a plot specific thing, but the character of Kyle Reese is in this film, who is of course John Connor's father and was in the first film, and he's younger, but he's played by Anton Yelchin, who was Chekhov in Star Trek.
Oh yes,
who's clearly on the up and up, and he actually does a fairly good impression, I would say, or not really impression, but he's much like Star Trek with the characters are kind of generally half impersonating, half similar to. He's a bit the same.
I did find his Star Trek, his accent as Chekhov in Star Trek was a bit generic, Eastern European.
Yes, I think he may actually be Russian though.
Well, I think he actually is. That's the thing. I looked it up, but he is actually. Then why does he not sound authentic at all? That's quite odd.
Well, yeah, but nor did Chekhov, I think.
Well, that's true.
Mm. Yeah, he has to make him sound like the other guy.
Yeah, but as Kyle Reese, he's pretty good, and he's got the same sort of delivery. Because I watched Terminator quite recently, and Michael Biehn has quite a sort of intense, slightly husky voice, and Anton Yelchin does that sort of voice, and he's also quite similar to look at as well. Mm. So that's a good crossover. And there are little touches. There's a thing with a shotgun that another character shows Kyle Reese about, sort of wrapping it around his hand so no one can take it off him. And when Kyle first comes back to 1984, we see him doing that.
Yes.
Which I didn't even remember, actually, from the film, but then sort of looks up and saw...
Well, again, Jed Zemo, he does liken this film to being a bit of a sort of one big tribute to the franchise, really, with various lines and recreations of other scenes from...
Yes,
but I like that. It makes you feel that it's still part of the
that's
same...
That's no bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
At all, yeah.
And also, because they're not... There's nothing to... They're not all forced. They all fit. I mean, you get someone saying, I'll be back. You get someone saying, come with me if you want to live. Mm. But they're in context, and they make sense. And also, they're quite generic. I mean, they've attained iconic status.
Yeah.
But they're also quite generic phrases.
Sorry,
so,
Hasta la Vista?
No.
No.
Oh, fortunately.
No. But there's some really nice physical tributes as well, like a couple of punches and recoveries, which, if you're a fan of T2, you'll go, that's nice.
Right.
Yeah, because we do... Yeah, there are a few callbacks to the other films, which we won't necessarily give away.
Okay.
What I would say is also really good about this film is that... Because obviously, you know, growing up with this film, you're kind of thinking, well, you know, the Terminator itself, you know, the ones that we recognise from the first two films, you go, that's just not scary anymore. You know, they're going, they're doing that. But there are Terminators in these films, and they are
there's a wider range of Terminator machines, because we've only ever, as you say, just seen the Arnie model and the Robert Patrick model and the Christanna Loken model.
Yes.
And those three, and that's it, I think, pretty much.
I think it is,
I think even in the flash forwards to the future in the past films, I think it's always been the Arnie model without skin, or it's kind of meant to be that. We just see the robotic skeleton. Whereas in this, we've got models older than that seen, and covering sort of ones that go in the water and ones that fly, and the machines and the hunter killers that we've seen. So there's a wide range of attacks could come from anywhere. And while they don't really talk about, I mean, they address the different models, but it all ties together with models we've heard about as well. They sort of mention them. So yeah, it all links up nicely.
I think that's what the stars of the shows are the big machines. Like, there was one which attacks a petrol station at one point.
Oh, yes.
And it's a huge beast.
Yes, you see in the trailer, it's enormous.
And
it's kind of like, much like in the Transformers trailer, we see one enormous machine. It's like that. Mm. But then you see other machine. There are a couple of moments where you see machines within machines, or kind of folding into each other, and how they work together.
And that was nice.
So it's not like Transformers, where they become other things, but you just see sort of a big ship, and you think, okay, that's just a flying ship. And then you see the machine come out of that and drop to the floor. You think, oh, that makes sense, because they're all transporting each other, they can design them. So it's everything's thought through nicely.
And it's not all just rugged machinery, like Transformers. It's got some other sleekness to it, because you do in this film see Skynet, and that's a different kind of beast as well. I thought it was very slick, which we had a conversation about, which I don't know whether we can say it now. The fact that there is a sort of, at one point, you see the main computer talking.
Oh, yes.
And it's just a little bit too human for my liking, as in it's got emotions and sort of queries. And for me, that was just a bit too human, considering the whole point of the war was anti-human. And
true. But then, given the context, they could just be pretending to have emotions to sort of get through.
Which does
slightly bring us on to one point, which I'm pleased that Jed didn't mention in his email, because there's something we find out in the film and is in the trailer.
Okay.
And when I saw this in the trailer, I thought, oh, good, now I know a bit more what the film's about, rather than just explosions. You actually see a human interest angle. But you haven't seen that trailer.
I haven't seen the trailer.
So there's something. No, because it's not. It is plot specific, but we can talk around it quite easily. Essentially, it's a thing that is revealed to us maybe half an hour in or so, something like that. But it's given away in the trailer, and I didn't mind that it was given away in the trailer. I wasn't watching it, because, as I think I mentioned before, in Flight Plan, Jodie Foster film, there's a plot line there which we're told, essentially something happens, we're told in the trailer isn't real, and then the film wastes half an hour trying to persuade us it might be real. And this is different, because it's something that gets revealed to us, but if you don't know that in the half hour, it'll be a revelation to you. So, oh, I didn't know that. But it's not irritating. It's not pitched. They're not trying to con the audience into thinking something else. So if you know the fact, then you'll be interpreting events knowing that. If you don't know the fact, then you'll be surprised when it happens.
Yes.
So it kind of works both ways.
Okay. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, but I'll be interested to see, because they things are implied but not really. So we'll see how it goes.
I'm thinking actually I haven't seen the original any of the Terminator films for a while, so I'm tempted to sit down and try and do a 1, 2, 3
marathon.
And then 4.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Do you have them?
I've got 1 and 2.
I have 3.
Ooh.
Yeah,
and
it is.
4 down the cinema. Hey!
Brilliant.
Can't do 5 yet. Haven't made that one.
No.
Will they make it? Is it?
Yeah.
There's talk of 5. One idea which apparently has been bandied around is going back to the time travel thing. And this is just complete conjecture, rumour thing. Possibly being set in London in 2011.
Right.
Because this is set. Terminator 4 is set in 2018.
Okay.
Well, actually starts in 2003, but then we jump forward.
Mm.
Yeah, so there could be, given we know time travel exists in that universe, it could be that they find a machine and go back earlier for some reason, and then, because 2011 is still after Judgment Day, but you're in a different place in the world and different, not as far along. So I don't know, that could be interesting. So
and how does it rate in 1, 2, 3, 4?
It's definitely 1, 2, 4, 3.
Oh really?
Okay. Oh yeah.
Oh good.
And 3 has its moments, but it just doesn't add much to it except the ending, which is very good. This, I think, it fleshes out context. Actually, that's another in a flash forward in Terminator 2. We see John Connor, obviously not looking like Christian Bale because it's a different bloke, but he's got a couple of distinguishing characteristics. I'll just say that And in this film, we see they tie into that as well. So they obviously thought things through and thought, we need. They're trying to connect everything. They're not just making their own thing.
So time has been taken on it. That's good. Good.
And yeah, I mean, you get the whole Terminator timeline is convoluted. It's a weird one because it's sort of convoluted, but at the same time, they never, in none of the films they ever really address it beyond just saying this has changed. We've got to fix it, and that's it. Or not even change. They just say we've got to stop the future happening. Whereas Back to the Future, people change things. But then, do the changes filter through? Can they split off timeline? In Terminator, it's never really addressed. Mm. Like, for example, we know Carl Reese is John Connor's father. Fair enough. But then, he can't have always been his father.
I think he could.
Well, but then, I realise this is a point of conjecture, because John Connor must have sent Carl Reese back to become his father, and then Carl Reese became John Connor's father, and he said, so it's kind of a loop. Chicken and egg thing, how did it ever happen? And then, well, there are two schools of thought. One is, oh, it just happens. And the other is that the first timeline version, John Connor, or Carl Reese wasn't John Connor's father. He was just another bloke. Sarah Connor might have been married to or got pregnant by some possibly highly trained Marine soldier bloke, gave birth to John Connor. And then the war went such that he sent someone back, and then Carl Reese impregnated Sarah Connor. And then timelines split off in a different way. Yeah. But we never know, so it's all conjecture.
There's, in last year's of Lost, there was a bit where John Locke meets he's travelling through time. He goes back in time, sees this guy called Richard Olpert, who then gives him a compass and says, John, hold on to this compass, you're going to need this compass. And so then John takes the compass, then John travels back in time to the before Richard Olpert gave him the compass,
right,
and gives him the compass and says, in about an hour you're going to see a new version of me, you need to give me this compass. And it's only after about a week after you watch the episode you suddenly go, hang on, where did this compass come from? They've just given it to each other, back and forth. And yeah, I saw an interview with the writers, and they were saying, yeah, we just put it in for a bit of fun. Like, you know, where does the... And the hilarious thing was the props guys saying, how do you, you know, do you want to make the compass look old and weathered in that shot or in that shot? And they're sort of going, well, in that scene, it's quite old. In that scene, it's older, but also newer. But also, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
really
matter. It's just a compass. Well,
and thing that doesn't really exist. It's sort of stuck in this permanent time loop.
And the thing is, it sounds a bit like that, really. I enjoy debating these sort of time things, but probably not here because it'll just bore everyone. But also, I think you always need to accept, unless with something Back to the Future where they kind of explain every time step.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can you can pick holes in it because they explain it so much. In the Terminator films, because they never really address it that much, it's just kind of, he's come back in time, this is happening, let's get on with it. So there are so many questions, you can never really know.
Yeah.
So it's not worth worrying about too much.
No.
And McGee said with this one, they've really just only gone with the premise, Carl Reese is John Connor's father. He has to make sure that Carl Reese survives in order for that to happen at some point in the future. That's all really they're worried about.
Yeah.
So, because if you try to overthink it anymore, then you just get bogged down in it.
Yeah, and also if you then go, well, it's it's foreseen that he must survive because John Connor exists, then it kind of takes off any kind of tension, really. Because you go, well, he's got to live because he's alive, therefore,
And I mean, you can get into conjecture like, oh, no, but maybe if Carl Reese went back or was killed, then that would be a different timeline, and John Connor would still exist in this timeline because he's already here. But then it's all just guesswork.
No, I've gone crazy.
Well, yeah, so it's an interesting point to sort of chat through when you're a bit drunk.
Yeah.
But it's not worth anyone actually sitting there and saying, no, this is wrong and this is right, because we just don't know.
I'm now delighted, actually, my other half is in the kitchen making lovely dinner, because if she were here right now,
her
brain would have melted.
She would have left.
Given that she's not a big fan of anything fantasy or sci-fi anyway, let alone what you've just said.
Yeah, fair enough. I'd imagine, if we would have lost her with robots, once you get into time-travelling robots and several timelines, it gets really complicated.
You have me at hello and not much after.
Yes.
But yes.
Anyway, so Terminator Salvation is good. Give it a go.
I liked it.
It's solid to good, I'd say. It's not necessarily spectacular. You can pick arguments with it, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it enough to see it twice without complaining.
Really, yeah. Based on Terminator Salvation, we're going to be doing Desert Island Flicks this week as your favourite dystopian future.
Oh, yes.
Yay! Who doesn't love a dystopian future? Whether it's a fascist state or a virus that wipes us all out.
I look forward to it.
Where would you like to live in the future? So have a think on that, and we will as well, and we'll tell you at the end of the show. And
yes.
You won't, because by the time you listen to this, we'll have recorded it due to some massive
time-travelling
thing.
Yes. Actually, just glancing down at Joe Zeba, one point that we didn't address, which I will cover, is he says the film belongs to Sam Worthington, which I can sort of see. I think he compares his performance to Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, and I wouldn't go quite that far, but fair enough. But yeah, Sam Worthington plays another character, sort of another primary male character in the film. And he, yeah, because I don't think I've seen him in anything else. He's Australian, but he's on the up and up. He's in some. Oh, he's in Avatar, James Cameron's new huge epic film, and he's the main guy in that. But Sam Worthington, he's very good in this. He's not. I wouldn't say he's absolutely spectacular, but he's more believable than Christian Bale, I think.
Yes.
Christian Bale is maybe a bit overstated in this, whereas Sam Worthington is quite is. You know, he's got conflict going on, and he portrays it well.
So
look forward to good things from him in the future.
Lastly, in Jed's email, it was a big long email he sent us, to be fair. Jed did also pick up what we were talking about last week about the younger generation of actors, who can replace whom, sort of thing. So he's suggesting Jamie Foxx will pick up from Denzel Washington.
I think I can
although
see
it's
that.
Not a massive age gap
no,
between
not
the two.
Really. But also, Jamie Foxx is sort of a bit too cool in a way. Denzel Washington is quite understatedly cool. I get the feeling Jamie Foxx is more overstated, not overstatedly cool, but he's slightly cooler.
I'd rather watch Denzel than Jamie any day.
I think I would, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's not much competition there. No. Denzel Washington is definitely going to be Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yes.
I think I can see that. Yeah. I can see, give it to
he'll be
years.
Sidney Poitier.
Just yes.
Name your black actors. There's all four black actors who I can say. So there you go. Anton Yelchin, who we talked about earlier, he reckons becoming Michael J. Fox. I've only seen him in Star Trek, and he did nothing for me.
Yeah, well, no, he I didn't have much to do. Having, really see, having seen him in Terminator, I can see it more. I think he's still, I mean, he's sort of dives straight in at the more heavyweight end, really.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him do something lighter. But yeah, I think he had, we'll put it this way, in Terminator, across the course of Terminator and Star Trek, he's demonstrated a lot more range than Shia LaBeouf has already.
Yes.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
So better than quite possibly got potential. Really? And he's also, I think, younger. I don't know how old he is. But he's younger than Shia LaBeouf, so he's got more time to work with, I think. He could go in and maybe do some more teeny stuff.
Yeah.
Not very teeny, but play a bit younger than Shia LaBeouf can.
And also, I like him. I think he's instantly likable as well.
Yeah, I think so. Appeal. Yes, he's got more charisma to him than Shia LaBeouf has.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll yet to be convinced. Having Star Trek didn't do enough.
Yeah, but
he only had about
10 lines in the whole
exactly,
thing.
Exactly, which is why I can't really see him as a new Michael J. Fox.
No,
so,
okay,
that,
yeah.
But, we'll see. Abigail Breslin is the new Jodie Foster.
Possibly. Thing is, in terms of very young female actresses, there's only a couple.
There's Dakota Fanning.
Yeah,
Dakota
Fanning.
I'd go Dakota Fanning personally.
All the Dakotas, north and south.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, she's a valid candidate.
But just because you see a young actress, you don't have to think Jodie Foster. She was a young actress,
but it's a young, good actress. If that makes sense. I mean, rather than just a generic little girl, it's a little girl with range.
Yeah.
And Abigail Breslin does have range, definitely. But I think Dakota Fanning may just...
Yeah.
But yeah, essentially, Dakota Fanning just got there first.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly.
But
they're
also,
close enough in age that...
Dakota Fanning is slightly, in a nice way, mousier looking. And Jodie Foster has got that kind of, like, elfin face.
Yes,
Jodie
Foster has never been pitched as a hottie as such. She's just sort of attractive. But that arguably widens the role of the range of parts she can play.
And finally, Natalie Portman as a young Meryl Streep.
Do you mind if I start laughing? No,
go for it. Laugh now. It's a bold choice, I've got to say.
I don't think it's that ridiculous a choice.
Sorry, Jed,
but Meryl Streep has earned her place, I think. Natalie Portman, she picks the worthier films a lot. She does go for the indie things and the sort of the bigger acting things rather than selling out too much. But I've yet to be overwhelmed. I mean, since Leon, I don't think she's quite lived up to much of her promise.
Leon was great, but... Star Wars, she was...
Oh, well, everyone was bad
awful.
In Star Wars.
Yeah,
and
but
that's
can
George
you imagine,
Lucas's fault.
Can you imagine a young Meryl Streep doing that performance in Star Wars?
No.
But I can't imagine... But I don't remember Meryl Streep ever being that young. I can only ever envisage Meryl Streep age about 40 upwards. And Natalie Portman isn't 40 yet. So it's hard to entirely correlate.
Well, if you want to suggest a younger actor who could be an older actor, podcast at moviebanter.co.uk.
But yes. Yeah. That's it. Ultimately, in terms of notably talented sort of... mid-20s to mid-30s, say, actresses, it's relatively slim pickings generally, and that's why I don't think Natalie Portman is that ridiculous a choice, because I don't think, in a way, she hasn't got that much competition, and I think she's going to make the effort to improve, if that makes sense. Whereas some people, like sort of Megan Fox's, I think, will always just play slightly mindless bimbo.
Natalie Portman's nearer Meryl Streep than Megan Fox, I think, probably, fair to say.
I'd even say Cate Blanchett would be a better Meryl Streep, but...
Yeah,
true.
Maybe.
And who's the one I'm thinking of? Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
I've never quite liked Tilda Swinton. She's just slightly too weird looking.
Racist. Just because she's ginger. I know.
Or her from, I can't remember her name, but she's in The Libertine.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah. Johnny Depp would be a great younger Meryl Streep.
Oh, he could. He could do it. He could pull it off. Are you thinking of Samantha Morton?
I think so.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. But again, she almost doesn't do enough in a weird way. Anyway, we shall see. Time will tell.
Indeed.
Yes.
To wrap up on the emails, thank you very much for the many people who've emailed in to tell us that John Cena is pronounced John Cena.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Super Toys actually emailed in, good old Super Toys, to pick up on the fact we talked about maybe doing a TV banter last week. And, you know, that sounds such a good idea. I think we may well do that.
I think we should. But you did say we could title it 30-something if we did it as this one, but unfortunately we've
missed. So yes. Sorry about that.
So we'll have to wait until another TV show title fits in.
We'll find one.
I'll also admit, Mark, who is actually Paul's brother, he's the one person who picked up on this, emailed in saying, I hope you didn't think that Jingle Weasel was in 28 Days Later, which is a reference I made last week. And I genuinely thought it was, but then looking it up, I realised, no, it's Cillian...
Murphy.
Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
And to be fair, they do look very similar.
They do. They do.
But one was Jesus and one was a scarecrow. So there's a slight difference there. They were. That's just true.
Speaking of my brother, a friend of his also does a movie-based podcast. Won't say which one just yet. We may be doing a little link up in the future.
Maybe if they plug ours, we'll plug theirs.
We'll see
how it goes.
But I did look it up, and you two can find this if you Google this, but I did find on one website, they were claiming that they were the podcast that was the first to report several pieces of major movie news, including the news that Danny Boyle was not going to direct the next James Bond film. And, you know, I mean no disrespect to my brother's friend here. But at the same time, I feel that we too could be a similar breaking news platform for other directors who aren't going to direct their next... I mean, for example, I could exclusively report today that McGee will not direct Jane Eyre. That's exclusive.
Oh, that's a shame.
That is a movie banter exclusive. You heard it here first.
I was hoping
for
good things.
You heard it here first. Woody Allen will not be directing Too Fast, 4 Furious. And Clint Eastwood will not direct Transformers 2. Yeah, you heard it here first. That's how exclusive we are here, okay? If you would like to suggest any other directors who will not be directing other films, then podcast at moviebanter.co.uk, and we will share that exclusive.
Yes, if you
want to
share a lack of movie news, then we'll get stuck in. Yes, talking about movie news, in terms of slightly more accurate, real movie news, which this isn't exclusive, unfortunately, because we've got it from elsewhere. But, yes, I just read this morning, rumours about a remake of Commando.
Oh, yes.
Arnold Schwarzenegger 80s thing.
Oh, yes.
Which, a bit like the term Total Recall we mentioned last week. I have a lot of affection for Commando, but at the same time, don't care.
Yes.
So if they remake it, then no bad thing, really. And arguably, allegedly, The Rock is in talks to star in it.
Oh, really?
Which could work. He's obviously taking over the Arnie mantle.
I heard this week they're doing Flight of the Navigator as well.
Yes.
As a remake.
Yeah. Which, again, is one of those films you, on some level, you think, oh, but it's a childhood classic. Yeah. At the same time, have any of us watched it in the past 15 years?
True.
It may be rubbish. Yeah. It's hard to say. One other reboot, actually, is a remake of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yes.
But slightly weirdly, not referring to the TV show at all, which is slightly odd, because that's built up. So it's going to be a whole new thing.
It's a new one, yeah.
But a bit darker, with no Joss Whedon writing it. Because he did the film as well.
Mm.
But then that changed. So, yeah, so that seems a slightly odd thing.
Yeah, but also there's so much already done with the series, it's probably good to, like, just chop it off and start again, though.
Well, but it was only... The series only finished a couple of years ago, so it seems slightly weird to release a film... That's now nothing to do with that series.
Yeah, but it's a bit like Superman with Terry Hatcher. I mean, that was another thing that they could have used in the films, but I'm kind of glad they didn't.
No, yes, but the TV series followed on was 8-9 years after the last film, which had been rubbish anyway, and the one before that had been rubbish as well. So the series had been kind of dead for a while, you know, on many levels.
No.
So they brought it back to life for the series. Whereas this, they've got a much loved series. And now they just want to make essentially a remake of a rubbish film. Because the film was rubbish and the TV series was good.
Yeah, but the comic book came first anyway, didn't it?
I think Buffy was a unique creation by Joss Whedon.
Oh, right.
I could be wrong. They've made comics since. I don't think it was based on a comic.
I went to see this film called Last Chance Harvey this week, given the choice between Terminator Salivation and...
just a dribbling Terminator.
And Last Chance Harvey.
Is it a belated sequel to Harvey about an invisible six-foot rabbit?
In no way at all.
Oh.
In no way at all. Afraid not. It's a film about... It's Dustin Hoffman and Emma Thompson. Romantic comedy sort of thing, but again, comedy loosely. Sort of, it's a romantic... light drama with comic moments in it, it's fair to say. So it's not sort of out and out comedy, really. But it's very very nice. It's very sort of, it's just very very sort of simple plot, but very affectionately done, mm-hmm. and both clearly, you know, particularly painted as people. They're not pretending to be younger than they are. Dustin Hoffman is attending the wedding of his daughter in London. So it's very nice to see a film with a good London setting,
yes.
that isn't all Big Ben and bobbies and buses,
yeah.
and taxis and things. So it's just, you know, it's properly filmed in London. The only thing is, as someone who lives near London, you can spot some geographical things. You're going, okay, if you've just walked from Paddington to Waterloo via Tower Bridge in the South Bank, that doesn't work, really.
Take some of them.
But fair play. So, yes, yeah, so Dustin Hoffman plays this guy who is a jingle writer who has his job's in jeopardy. He's 60-something, and his daughter is getting married. But his daughter's got a stepfather. Dustin Hoffman was never there for her, and so on. And so he's clearly facing a very bad weekend when he's at this wedding, doesn't really know anyone. The daughter wants the stepfather to give her away instead of him. It's just awkward. It's a good 40 minutes of cringeworthy. It's almost like watching The Office, really, in some moments. You think, oh no, I can't watch any more of this man's life. Just, you know, his boss wants to sack him. His daughter doesn't really want him around. He's at this wedding party where everyone wants to talk to anyone else but him, and it's his, he's the father.
Because it's not even, if he just didn't know anyone and no one knew him, then you can kind of say, hello, who are you? Who are you? Whereas if everyone kind of knows who he is, and as a result, doesn't want to talk to him,
there's a lot of cringeworthy stuff there. And then, you know, Emma Thompson then whistles along into his life, and she, similarly, it's lovely, quite affectionately done in the first sort of third of the film, is equally about the two of these characters living separately.
Yeah.
And she is trying to be set up on dates, and everyone is trying to set up with a younger guy who then goes off and talks about computers and she hasn't got a clue. And so again, she feels that she's getting on in years as well and is giving up,
right.
and has an ageing mother who will not sort of let her be independent and so on. And so it's just very sweetly told, and it's these, you know, the couple who meet each other and the newfound zest for life they have for each other. But it's a real actor's movie. These guys, they really... you know, the script is pretty good, but the acting is first class. I can't imagine anyone else apart from these two guys doing it. And as Zoe reported when she saw the film, she was saying that no one does this sort of role better than Emma Thompson. The sort of, you know, clearly a woman who has been through things, trying to put a brave face on it. But it's, you know, she's kind of reprising the Love Actually role.
Well, I was just thinking, the description of it sounds like it could be, really tenuously, a sequel to Love Actually, where, you know, she split up with Alan Rickman and is now trying to make a go of it by herself.
Well,
but presumably with the kids of mysteriously vanished.
Yeah, there's no, she's never had kids, yes, and she kind of regrets it in this film, and she's realised she's sort of missed the chance. And so it's, again, that's very very sweetly told as well. But it, yeah, it's really just these two. It's just a joy to watch. You know, I'm there thinking, why doesn't Dustin Hoffman make more films? I haven't seen him in much lately, and he's really good, and Emma Thompson's really good as well. So yeah, I thought it was a very nice film, really, and well worth a watch. Yeah, and I think it's a missing sort of, there's a big gap in the market for sort of more mature actors in these sort of roles, really. And it feels like, you know, something's got to give. As good as it gets, it's really Jack Nicholson holding this.
Something's got to give. That's what I was trying to. Was that?
That was Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton, yes.
Yes, yeah.
I think that was the one that was sort of the turning point, or made me realise it's a turning point. Essentially, because we've got an ageing generation, I mean, worldwide, and so there'll probably be more interest in this sort of film as time goes on, because you'll get partly actors getting older.
Exactly.
But also an older audience who want to see things like this.
Yeah.
And also, hopefully, it'll end up like films like this, which are just good generally.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it may appeal strongly to older people, but if you just appreciate good film.
No, it's just a good film. It's actually, I'd say it's better than those other films, really, the sort of more Jack Nicholson romantic comedies, just because it's got really good heart to it, and the acting's really good in it as well. But certainly, I think that there is going to be, you know, this generation of actors that we've been familiar growing up with, like Harrison Ford, for example, who, yes, he'll do some action films, but then, of course, now he can't really do action anymore because he's getting on a bit. And then he used to do some occasional sort of romantic comedy or romantic lead. And, I mean, even he was doing, like, Sabrina, he did years ago. And even then he was playing an older guy in it. And that was 15 years ago. So now he cannot get away anymore with playing a romantic lead without any questions asked about the age.
Yeah.
There's always going to be that as a factor.
Like, is it... which film? Is it the film that you really like, which was the remade of Mark Wahlberg?
Truth About Charlie was the charade.
Yes, charade. Yeah, because yeah. isn't that got a very an older male
yeah,
actor?
Exactly,
very
young, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it was slightly odd then, and I think now it would be even weirder.
Yeah,
I mean, even though obviously it happens in reality. Because like Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart, but I think in films it's just a bit weird.
And yes, you'll get the occasional film still being made where they take a romantic comedy and the twist will be he's quite old, she's quite young.
Yeah.
But not every film will be that. And at some point, you've just got to get a film which just goes, okay, we're not going to have a young female lead in this.
Yeah.
She's going to be 50, he's going to be 60, you know, and that's the coupling they're going to make. Instead of, I mean, even things like, I know we talked about this when Yes Man came out. It's not, really acknowledged in that, but Jim Carrey's sort of 40-ish, and Zooey Deschanel is 20, early 20s. And it's not really even commented on. It's just the fact he's an actor we're familiar with, so the studio want to use him, but people are thinking, well, we can't actually put him alongside a woman his age.
Yeah.
Who'll watch that? So they just go for someone 15 years younger than him. But in reality, I think at some point, some films are just have to bite the bullet and say, okay, we're going to cast someone, you know, both actors will be over 50. You know.
But then a similar sort of thing has happened with, I think it was more rumoured, but it sort of makes sense. And I can't remember who the woman was, in the new Robin Hood film that they're filming at the moment, which is apparently hitting issues. In that Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe have apparently fallen out and aren't really talking to each other much. And it's anyway, but the original woman cast in that, I can't remember who she was, but she was someone quite young and hot. And then apparently the studio looked at it and thought, oh, yeah, Russell Crowe isn't young and hot.
Yeah.
It just looks a bit weird.
Yeah.
And so they put, I think, Kate Blanchett in instead.
Oh,
which
that's right,
is
yes,
sort of good, because, yeah, she's slightly older actress. But it does also just imply, Kate, we need someone who's not young or hot. Could you be? Oh, nice. poor woman.
Thanks for that.
Exactly. But, yeah, just I think they just wanted to bring the ages, more, make them slightly
I actually met a comedian this week for our new feature, Comedians Talk About Films, which needs a catchy title.
Yes, especially because it may not always be comedians.
Well, indeed, yes. Or indeed films.
Well, sure. regular people talk
people
about
talk.
Shopping.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not quite
good. But I didn't have my recording equipment with me, unfortunately, this gig, but which is a shame, because I gig with a comedian called Kevin Shepherd, who is in Nottingham, the new film. He's as an extra, but in fact he's got a nice old-fashioned Sherwood Forest beard that he's been grooming for a while. Yeah, he's been sort of captured. There's like him and about eight others who sort of stand in a row in a bunch of costumes.
Oh, then
they go and change costumes. And so, yeah, he's in it hundreds of times.
Oh, nice.
The big Sherwood Forest army, you know, 80 of them, and Kevin Shepherd.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that and see if I can spot it.
Wow, it's Robin Hood and the Clones.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a film I'd see.
So that was one inside track on it. And the other one was that actually, the same village I got married in, Windlesham. The local pub there, there's a guy I know who works in the kitchens. Mm-hmm. And he was there one day and someone said, a customer wants to, you know, congratulate you on a fine meal. And he goes, fair enough, it's only pub grub, mate. It's only a harvester, but don't matter, you know. And Russell Crowe comes in and says,
oh, nice.
A fine sandwich. Again, rather oddly, and this guy, thanks very much. It's out the packet, but don't worry. So Russell Crowe's been dining over in Windlesham. Because I gather they've been filming it largely around the sort of Surrey, Berkshire area.
Yeah, well, I know Gladiator was filmed in, was it Farnham Woods, Farnham Forest, which is very near us. And so, and Ridley Coe, being English, obviously knows the area. Yeah. So, and we do forests.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Right? Well, I know that. I think it was on Chobham Common, which is very near Windlesham as well, just next to my parents' house, actually, where they did lots of the Dark Knight filming with.
Oh, really?
They had the Batmobile there for a little while.
Wasn't it there? It was somewhere around vaguely southeast where there was a crash where the stuntman
died. Indeed, that's right. It was. Yeah, that was Chobham Common as well. I think actually,
which was it was very sad.
I think also Thorpe Park, the theme park, which is again quite nearby, somewhere apparently in a shed somewhere there. There's a life-size model of Christian Bale.
Oh really?
Yeah, just in a shed. Hope it's the model and not him.
Someone starting off with House of Wax and just starting with Christian Bale.
I, from what I gather, I think it was for Terminator Salvation, and it was something they were going to blow up or do a stunt with or some sort.
Right.
And then never did, or didn't cut the scene, just didn't do it, whatever. And so they just put it in a shed in Thorpe Park beneath a roller coaster. Why wouldn't you?
Well, of course.
Well, maybe the original ending for the new Terminator film was that John Connor is killed by putting him on a roller coaster.
That's true.
And colliding into him.
He goes to Thorpe Park.
You know, yeah, the day out of Thorpe Park. And
he's scared to death by
stealth. Rides the rapids. And you know.
Goes in the teacups.
Yeah, exactly. The teacup 1000.
Right. Wouldn't be one of the scarier films, but
not really. Yeah. Even the Resistance need a bit of fun, though. Well, need a day out, don't they?
Yeah.
Speaking of so Kevin Shepherd was a comedian. Yes. I will try and track down at a future date with a dictaphone and and you know get his opinions on you know working with Russell Crowe in Nottingham, which is actually in Surrey. But one comedian I did bump into this week with my recording equipment was Matt Price. So here's what he thought about some films.
I'm here with Mr. Matt Price. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Can you tell me then your pick of some movies? Are there a recent release or last couple of years or all time favourite?
Okay, all-time favourite, I would say, Raging Bull, actually, with Robert De Niro. I'm fascinated with, this sounds bad, fascinated with violence, but really it's a portrait of a man's decline. It's incredible that, because it's a true story, obviously, that a man who was a champion of the world should end up destroying himself, as so many people do. It's a beautiful movie, and it works on so many levels.
Brilliant, brilliant. It's fine Martin Scorsese, isn't it?
Yes. So it's an incredible kind of work.
One of the best, you know, he won the Oscar more recently, but he should have got it back then, really, I suppose.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Okay, wonderful. And anything more recent then for
him? Slumdog, actually. I don't know how popular that is, but it made me laugh and it made me cry. I think it's an inspired movie. Genius. I didn't know what it was going to be, but to be honest, I thought it would be funny.
Yeah.
But it's not. It was just extremely touching, and it had everything.
Yeah.
It had pathos, and it had a happy end. And I'm a simpleton when it comes to films.
Yeah.
I like things to work out well in the end.
Yeah. And one other film you mentioned earlier as well was Rocky Balboa as well. Is that right?
Yes, I know. It's the ultimate feel-good film. You know that eventually he's going to win. I like Rocky VI, as it was called, simply because he lived the dream. In Cardiff, they applauded at the end of the movie. And it made me smile for days.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you much indeed. Three fine recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
So that was Mr. Matt Price.
Hey.
Thank you, Matt Price.
Thank you.
With your opinions, largely boxing heavy.
That's right. And why not? Yeah.
Kind of expecting Boxing Helena to be the third one then. But no, no, he went for Slumdog. Which, incidentally, I saw Slumdog last night. Again, saw it on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And my other half had not seen it before. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And again, her comment that she's phoning in because she's a bit ill is... that, yes, she particularly enjoyed, yes, the kids in it, of course, being actually from the slums and taken from it. Thought that was a wonderful, and again reminded her of her previously mentioned favourite film, Rabbit Proof Fence, where
did
a similar thing and got the child actors from actually where the events of the film happened.
Yes.
And sort of plucked them from the same position the actors, the characters were in, really.
Yeah.
And then put them back in again and said, there you go, back to your life story again.
And then one or two that didn't have their houses bulldozed.
Yes. Yeah, in Slumdog,
but then
Danny
Boyle's bought them a flat.
Exactly. It's very nice.
Which must be, I wonder if any of them who didn't have their houses bulldozed, they're thinking, still in the slum, thinking, wish mine had been bulldozed. I have a nice flat now. Yeah. As it is, I'm still stuck here in the slums.
Instead, I'm going to earn enough money to one day buy a bulldozer and then bulldoze my house. There you go, Danny.
I was just going to say, and then bulldoze their flats.
Oh, that's right. True.
Come back to the slums.
I think that may be everything
except,
for this week.
Except for
Desert Island Flicks. Your favourite dystopian future. or non-dystopian future. Which future would you like to live in, of all the movies available?
True.
Now, it's a tricky one, this, because generally, it's not really a nice future in most films, because they're always sort of, you know, a bit sort of fascist state, or
everyone's
in a
prison. Yeah, or too good to be true.
It never lasts, does it? You know, a good, nice future wouldn't make a good film.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, because we haven't really talked about this yet, I wouldn't be surprised if we just end up with kind of a compromise future of elements of things.
Maybe.
Although, of course, we need to pick a final film.
Yeah.
Well, I've got one in mind.
Okay, what's that?
Well, it's I really like it until the point where it goes wrong. And it, being gadget fan that I am, iRobot, off the top of my head, I quite like.
The idea
of sort of robots kicking around and you've got, you know, a robot there that can do your bidding, provided provided they then don't turn on their human masters and try and keep us all suppressed.
Is that fascist state or is that not a fascist state?
It's not. It's completely normal, nice future, just with robots.
Okay.
And then the robots kind of turn it into a fascist state.
Yes.
But they turn the tables. And I think it even goes back to then all the robots... I think the ending is all the robots go back to normal again.
Right.
So then you're sitting in the fight. Well, yes. That's I quite like that.
I don't want one too gadget heavy though, really.
Well, you're not going to like the future then.
I don't want a bit of gadget heavy. I don't want robots, you know, entirely, you know.
Oh.
I don't want them to have that power.
Well, yes, but that's very much not for you.
Back to the Future 2 future. Hoverboards. Yeah. I like a hoverboard. That's so really
you,
what it comes
you want
down
kind
to.
Of an 80s future, really.
Pretty much.
That is trash. Yeah. As I said, as an insult, I was thinking, no, Paul really would want that. And frankly, who wouldn't?
Of course, an 80s future. It's perfect. You know,
it's got none of the modern developments. There's no internet. Or anything, if I'm going to have 3D films.
Yeah, if I want a robot, I want a robot that, as I walk in the house, it'll go, "Hey, it's the master of the house. It's the daddy, king of the castle." That's what I want. I want one of those. Yeah.
And again, you see, Back to the Future 2, it's not really dystopian. It's sort of normal life, but just a bit futuristic.
Yeah, just lots
flying
of
cars, that's what we need.
They have got very quick justice, though. I'm not so sure.
There's no lawyers.
Quick justice?
Well, yeah, don't they judge you and they sentence lawyers, you and judge you in a second sort of thing.
Where do we see that?
It's when they crash into the courthouse.
Doc says it, yeah.
Yes.
So that implies fascist state, really. It says we do away with the public way of, you know...
There's got to be some fault.
...trying people.
On nice future... I'm going to say Bill and Ted.
Yay!
Yeah.
That's arguably an even more 80s future.
Yeah. It's the only one I can think of that's nice.
Well,
to be fair.
No, true. But then who wants nice?
But I was also thinking maybe something like Demolition Man, but then again, they don't have any physical contact or anything, then that sounds pretty
rough. Yeah, but then kind of they're happy with that. But admittedly,
they are.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I like The Island, but that's because I like the future to have Scarlett Johansson running around lots.
That's true. Multiple Scarlett Johanssons.
Really, yeah, I think.
Ah, the running. Always the running.
Always the running.
And you've got multiple Ewan McGregors. You're well away.
Yeah. Okay.
Sold. There you go. Absolutely.
Well, again, see, that's not a particularly dystopian view. I mean, there's this one company being unethical, but the future itself seems quite normal and just a bit more advanced. Yeah. And, Minority Report to a degree as well.
That is a fascist state, though, isn't it?
Well, it's verging on it a little bit. The whole pre-crime thing.
Fascist-ish, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It's fascist-ish. ultimately, it's the technology that I like in future films.
How fascist a state would you tolerate for some new technology?
Well, yeah, that's true. It would have to be... Yeah, I mean, I'm not that tolerant of fascism, I have to say. You know, I like my gadgets, but I also quite like the right to use them.
That's always good.
Yeah. So not particularly fascist. Yeah.
Okay.
So iRobot. So what do you go? iRobot, Back to the Future 2,
Back to the Future
2
for me.
Bill and Ted.
Yeah, I think that's something, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's kind of telling that you both have gone for the 80s version, and I've gone for the sort of the more streamlined but gadget but soulless one, which is quite telling.
Planet of the Apes. That's always quite nice. Isn't
that's
it?
True. Yeah.
Well, on the dystopian future, I mean, for a film on dystopian future, the best one is got to be Blade Runner.
Yeah, I think the most complete vision of a dystopian future is Blade Runner.
Yeah. But I don't want to live there.
Well, mind you, I say that. No, it's probably the most stylish vision of the future. Mm. I think Minority Report, I mean, it's going to sound ridiculously qualified. Apart from the fortune telling, Minority Report is the most believable. That makes sense.
Yes,
But I know...
That was brilliant, actually.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the technology in Minority Report will happen and is happening. I mean, the gesture thing exists now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's... And that was very well foreseen. Mm. But also, so as a result, it's a bit less extreme. Whereas Blade Runner is a... Well, it's a style and a look that I don't think anything was compared to. I don't think Blade Runner was compared to anything, really, beforehand.
No.
But
no.
Everything since gets compared to Blade Runner, which I think is telling.
But yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
okay, well, I think we'll probably leave it there then.
I think that's the last one.
And so if you would like to offer your favourite future, dystopian or otherwise, then do email us, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk, and also with any breaking news of directing or not directing films, please do tell us that.
Real or fake news.
Some fake news we can break it here.
Ideally telling us which is which.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
That might help. You can follow us on Twitter.
We're on Twitter, we're on the Facebook, we're on iTunes.
Yes. And please do, we should hammer this point more often, which is please do spread the word, get people listening.
Yeah.
Because as I've often said, but it's always true, numbers are always trending upwards. Yeah. But slowly, frankly.
Too slowly. Come on.
Yeah,
you know.
No, it's ridiculous.
We're going to stop otherwise, we? You know,
that's true. We're going to wind down.
We're not doing the world takeover.
That is very true. If you're a member of different website or film forums or similar, then just post, hey, try this.
Just send out an email to all your friends. Just
say, that's a very good point.
If you can't sleep at night, try this.
Well, really, if everyone listening got like one other person to listen, that would double our audience.
That'd be amazing.
Try and get one or two other people to listen, and then it'll all spiral, and post it on forums. And spread the word.
And then here's to the next 30. Oh yes. So thank you. I raised my arm, though, even though
victory salute.
No one else can see it.
That's right. We can see it. We know it happened.
Valiant gesture like Henry V.
Oh yes.
Lovely. So thank you for tuning in,
thank
and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.